We're doing Chafetz Chaim. We're learning the laws of the prohibition of Lashon Hara, speaking badly about other people. And we had learned about the concept that when something is publicized, when something is said in the presence of three other people, then that can sometimes, there can be instances where it becomes public knowledge. And that gives us certain leniencies with regard to the laws of Lashon Hara, as we've been discussing in detail. V'chol zeh shedibarnu, says the Chafetz Chaim, everything we've discussed hitherto, hu mitzad isur amira be'atzmo, that's in regard to the prohibition of recounting, of telling over the Lashon Hara. You're in the lunchroom, someone says something in the presence of three other people, so we have the leniencies we've been discussing. Aval chas v'chalila, lo'osif afilu teva achat. All of this is in regards to telling over exactly what you heard, but it is very prohibited to add even a word. Meaning you heard one thing, and the temptation is often to embellish what we've heard. As we learned in the Chazon Ish, the nature of man is that he likes to tell over stories that will grab people's attention. You know, the people who were careful in their ethics, when someone would ask them the time, they'd look at their watch to make sure they got it down to the minute. And I'm not talking about the days of digital watches. I'm talking about analog watches. They would look, because I don't want to tell him it's 8:45 when it's 8:44, because it's part of how I train myself to be accurate in the way I talk. Part of being an honest person is I'm careful with my honesty. But there's a huge temptation, and our nature is not repulsed. On the contrary, our nature is attracted to lies. We're attracted to telling over stories and to making a sensation in what we hear and what we say. So the Chafetz Chaim says everything we've been discussing is if you're accurate in how you tell it over, but there's no permissibility to add even a word. Or to try and convince, to make the issue sound more palatable, more believable to the listener, which is always the temptation. There are a million examples to this. You know, someone's dating someone and you feel they should know certain information, and you say, you know, everyone knows it. So you come over and you want to tell them, but you want to make sure they really appreciate how severe it is. Wait a second, tell them the facts. It's their responsibility to understand on their own. But we're tempted because we want there's a desire within man that when he says something over, he wants his words to be accepted. And so we are very tempted to embellish, to stress, to develop what we tell over because we want to ensure that what we say is accepted. No, says the Chafetz Chaim, that is not permissible. You can, even where it's permissible to tell it over, that does not allow you to embellish or to try and make it more convincing to the listener. Lomar sha'amaseh shenishma al Shimon yafe nishma alav. For example, you want to add and say, yeah, it makes perfect sense that he really did that. You want to say that, but why would that be permissible? You come over and you say, I heard that in his last job, he stole. Okay, you heard that. In certain circumstances, it's permissible, and even your responsibility to tell that over. But if you say, and you know, and the way I know him, it actually makes sense that he's a thief. Who gave you the right to say that? Now this comes up in Shiduchim. You guys will be contacted when your friends are going out. They'll ask you about your friends. You have to talk nicely, positively. What if there's something you think is a matter of concern? So you could say, you know, this is what I can think of right now, but let me think it over. And if I have more to add, I have your number. You jot down the number, you go and ask a shayla, should I say more? You verify. You know, people destroy other people with the spoken word. It's enough to say a word, and you can really destroy a person's reputation or a person's chances at a certain shiduch. Anything of this nature, this is undoubtedly prohibited in all in all forms and shapes, because that's how we ruin a person's reputation. You heard one issue. You develop it into more when you tell it over. And then, based on your own deduction, you add something and you're hurting the person's reputation far more than the information you initially heard. And furthermore, because the second issue with what you're doing is that you're giving the stamp of approval that it is the truth. That's another thing which the older you get, the more you should pay attention to this. People like to believe things. But who says it's true? You know, someone calls you up and says, so-and-so did such and such, and we're so quick to believe, but who said it's true? Well, why should I believe it so quickly? I told you the different stories we've had here, where people have spoken very poorly of other people, and sometimes there's nothing to it. Sometimes there's a little bit of truth to it. Sometimes the whole story is twisted. Why should you be quick to believe? Even if you heard it, and even if it was said publicly, and you think you're permitted to tell it over, that doesn't mean you have a right to give the stamp, yes, it's true.
Well, so
I'm with you.
What about people, for example, in the public
domain? I didn't hear you. About 5-6 years ago, well, 4 or 5 years ago, we had a student who had no family here in Israel. He converted to Judaism, and his family was back in the Ukraine, and he had an important job. He was a scientist, and he would show up steadily to the Friday classes. So, one Thursday night, I see him, and he came to class Thursday night. I said, "What's the deal? You look sick." He said, "Yeah, I have the flu." I said, "Okay, I don't know if it makes sense for you to come to class. Maybe you should stay in bed and get better." So he went home and went to bed. And the next morning, he didn't show up to class. Fine. He wasn't feeling well. The next Friday, he didn't show up to class. So he never missed a Friday, you know, for years. And when it suddenly dawned on me on Sunday or Monday that I hadn't seen him, I stopped class in the middle of class, and I said, "Gentlemen, we're not learning now. We have to make sure he's okay. 1 second." I went and I called him. No answer. We spent the rest of the night looking for him until the crack of dawn when we didn't find him. And at somewhere around like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we found him. He had passed away in bed. Okay, true story. No one knew anything about him. No one. Meaning that he used to come to my house for Shabbos meals, but no one else knew anything. No one knew how he had died. He had died a while before we found him. And so they took his body to decide whether they would do an autopsy, and then we went and fought in court that there was really no cause for an autopsy. There was no sign of foul play. What difference does it make why he died? It's not like he has a family that it affects. So why desecrate the body? Okay, so the news calls me up, the media, and they say, "We'd like to hear about the story of your student who you found that had passed away." They had nothing to talk about that day, so this was an interesting story. They wanted to write about it. I said, "I'm not interested in talking to you." And they said, "But we want to write up a story." And I said, "And I'm not going to give you the facts." I asked the policeman who was on site, and he said, "I don't want to talk to him about it either." So there were two people who knew the story. The policeman who found him, who didn't know too much, I knew more than him because I actually found him, not the policeman, and me. That did not stop the media within 3 hours to put out a story with great details about the student and everything he had gone through and how he died. They had zero facts. Because when the story came out, I went to the police and I said, "Did you talk to the media?" And they said, "No, we put a gag on it. We said no one's allowed to talk to them." So the media showed up to the guy's house, and no one was there who knew anything, because really, factually, no one knew. But that didn't stop them from putting out a detailed story. A lot of details.
Wow, awesome.
Next story. There was a story of an organ donation. which the people did it in accordance with halacha, and they worked very hard with the halachic authorities to know what could be donated, when it could be donated. And the family was very careful, going with the greatest halachic authorities to know what was permissible and what wasn't. And they arranged that when their relative, who they knew was going to pass away within a matter of a day or two, whatever organs could be donated would be donated in accordance with halacha, when it was 100% clear that it wouldn't cause his death, etc. Working hand in hand with the halachic authorities of Jerusalem. The media called up, and the family said, we don't want public information, we don't want to say anything. So the media pursued them for a day or two, and then went out and put out a beautiful story about this organ donation, having zero facts, and making up the facts the whole way through, because I was working on it with the family, and I knew and they knew the facts, but the media had no clue what the facts was, but it didn't stop them. They had a good story. Didn't matter whether it was factual or not. They just went and put it out. So twice in my life, I've had instances where I was one of the only people who knew the story, and everyone who knew the story did not want it to hit the media. And then the media went and put out a whole detailed story based on nothing. They had no facts. And when we read the story, we were shocked because we knew the facts, and what they wrote had nothing to do with the facts. So you ask me whether we should believe stuff that's in the newspaper. Our experience shows that it doesn't exactly work that way. There were many years when no one would show up to Rabin's memorial services. You'd have less than 100 people. You'd have a few people showing up. But the media wrote that thousands showed up until someone went and took a picture. And for years, they would write that on Yom Kippur, there were children throwing rocks at cars in Bnei Brak. Funny thing that the roads are closed in Bnei Brak. And when there was the explosion in the Dolphinarium, they spent 24 hours writing about how the Chevra Kadisha wouldn't bury the bodies because they had desecrated Shabbos. When someone contacted the Chevra Kadisha, they said, no one turned to us because we're closed on Shabbos. We don't work on Shabbos. So on Friday night, there was an explosion in the Dolphinarium. And all of Shabbos, the media is saying how the Chevra Kadisha won't deal with the bodies because these are people who desecrated Shabbos. And only on Motzei Shabbat did anyone know about it because they didn't. They're closed on Shabbos. They don't work on Shabbos, right? And they didn't bother retracting what they said because the media was already full of the story that the Orthodox Jews won't bury the non-observant Jews because they desecrated Shabbos. So can you believe the media? I don't know. There have been whole books written about stories that have been through the media that have no basis in reality. So I don't think we can be so quick to just grab onto a story the media says, and so now everyone knows it's true. We can tell it over. I don't know.
Like the movie Eternal Two.
Okay.
No, for a kind of the Nazis.
Okay. So back to the Chafetz Chaim. So the Chafetz Chaim says, we even if we heard something in a public setting, and so we have certain leniencies about telling it over, what we cannot do is give it an affirmation of truth. You don't know if it's true. So you can't tell it over with that convincing remark that, of why you think it's true. And that's prohibited according to everyone, as we will expand on later on. We'll see this more in the 7th chapter. That's why we have to be very careful. Sometimes someone is well known that in their youth they did something evil. But ever since then he's well behaved. So he did something wrong when he was younger. Or his parents, they have a reputation that his ancestors did things that were very terrible. And he does not go in their footsteps. We had a student here who told us that his whole family were gangsters. They were all mob members. And he wanted out. He wanted to lead an honest life. So now, are you allowed to talk about his past? So these are issues where technically there's nothing wrong with the person. It's prohibited to shame him and to tell other people, tell even his friends about this. Why? What difference does it make that this is something he did years ago, or this is something that his ancestors did? You know, there was a huge scandal here in Israel where someone was in shul, and he was a full standing member, him and his children, and then someone found out that this person's parents were Nazis. What do you want from the person? The person didn't choose who his parents would be. So the person converted to Judaism, and he was a very good human being. But the people in shul said they don't want to sit next to him. They don't want to daven with him, which is completely against the halacha. You have to love the person. The person did a tremendous thing. They overcame their past, and they became a beautiful Jew. So is it their fault, what their parents did? What do you want from the guy? So it was completely wrong, but people weren't, as often happens when people don't learn halacha, so they take their emotions, and then they say, in the name of halacha, I'm doing this. In the name of the Torah, I'm going to shame him. Why? ומישהו עובר על זה ומספר בדברים אלו בפני בני אדם, אפילו שלא בפניו, כדי לבזותו בעיני עמו, and someone who transgresses this, and he tells other people something, even though the person's not present, but you know you're shaming him in the eyes of other people, אפילו לא יוסיף שום דבר על האמת, even if everything you say is accurate and truth, you didn't embellish it a drop, ומכלל כת מספרי לשון הרע שאינם מקבלי השכינה. The Chafetz Chaim says, this is part of what the Talmud tells us, that when you have groups in heaven that are distanced from Hashem, there are groups of people that Hashem says, I don't want them to come close to me. One of those groups are those who tell over Lashon Hara. So the Chafetz Chaim says, someone who tells this over, he tells over someone's history or someone's past, things that are not relevant, even though they're true, well, that's a person that's going to be thrown into that group where Hashem says, I don't want them to see my face. Moshkatav b'sharei tshuva, as it says in the Sha'arei Tshuva, ve'lo shayach al ze klal eter da petlata. And here there's no leniency just because three people know it, just because it was said over before three people. Av she'davar ze mefusam befi kol, even though many people know it. Achrei shal pi emet, en alav shum gnai b'zeh, being that technically the guy did nothing wrong. So he has a history, he did something wrong 5, 10, 15 years ago. What do you want from him? He did tshuva, you see he's an upstanding citizen. Okay, so you got to move on. As it says in Yechezkel, Ben lo yisa ba'avonav, as Ezekiel says, a son doesn't have to carry the burden of his father's transgressions. And when a person does tshuva, kol pshav asher asa lo yizachu, then what he's done wrong will be forgotten. V'oseu avur ze lelag b'fi abriyot. And a person chooses to cause this person to be mocked by people incorrectly. But if a person brings it back to light, he brings it back to the surface, the past that this person has, so he's shaming him in front of other people.
Why is it acceptable in
the How so? What do you mean?
I mean, if somebody wants to divorce someone, you know, the wife will try to look as bad as possible, and, you know, and if it's like
you're right. There are instances where the Talmud says people tried to bring certain matters to court, and a person, it says, Zingud came to court and told the court that Tuvia did something wrong and he deserves to be punished for it. So the court said to Zingud, it's interesting that you just testified about Tuvia, we're going to give you lashes for it. So Zingud said, Tuvia chata, Tuvia transgressed. The Zingud, I, Zingud, Mingud, I'm getting the lashes. The word Zingud and Mingud rhyme, right? Mingud means to get lashes. So he said, Tuvia chata, Tuvia did the transgression, the Zingud Mingud, and Zingud's getting the lashes. What's going on here? They told him it's Lashon Hara. By what right are you standing here telling? So that's a tough call, meaning not, that's part of what the court has to rule on, whether they should accept.
They don't know. Also, if people are lying in the Beit Din and they say, you know, this is not true and I want it that it's written in record, and they say, okay, the Tuanit agrees, okay, I'll take it back, it's not true, like that. Why doesn't the Tuanit get a punishment like for that?
So, questions about Beit Din for Thursday night.
He did a bad thing, and next time.